This was all about ignorance, which is a driving force for entrepreneurs. If you know how difficult something is, most probably you'll never try it.
I'm your host, Dave Knox, and this is Predicting the Turn, a show that helps business leaders meet their industry's inevitable disruption head on.
Welcome to another episode of Predicting the Turn. Today, we're going to jump into the world of CPG Foods as we sit down with founder and CEO Yannis Varelas of Olia Foods. Yannis, welcome to the show.
Great to be here. Thank you for having me.
It's my pleasure. So I want to start, you've got a fascinating background that this is not a brand that magically appeared on store shelves. It's one that comes with a really rich family history. So can you start, tell me about your family's journey in the world of ancient grains and how that led to where you are today.
Yeah, every business starts with a problem. It always starts with trying to resolve an issue that someone has. In our case, that's always true. In our case, this is a bit, the problem was not about the end consumers originally, but it was about how can we take our family business and our knowledge and take it to the next level. Let me share the full story chronologically. So our family has been in the farming and milling grains forever. What this means is my great-grandmother grew up in a flour mill, and that's the beginning of the story as I know it, meaning that my great-grandmother, her father had a flour mill. So what they would do is they would collect all the grains from the area and they would produce flour from these grains. And this has been going on from one generation to another until today. So for over 100 years old. And I decided to join our family business in order to practically help my mother. My mother is now the CEO of the family business. Something that I forgot to mention and might be interesting in the story is that our flour mill is located in Greece in an area which is called Thrace, which is far away from the main markets of Europe. So in this area, the main source of income of the community is farming. Olia came to life as part of the evolution of the family business, trying to figure out how we can leverage our knowledge on grains, but deliver an end product instead of offering baking ingredient B2B, business to business, but offering our values and our knowledge for end products. And that's where we used our knowledge or know-how on farming proprietary blends of ancient grains, as well as developing in flours that can deliver a product that has not only the nutritional value, but also the technical characteristics needed to produce bars and cookies and snacks.
Related to that, you had this amazing historical family business around business to business, the B2B space. You decided to move into the B2C. How did you go from Greece to launching the brand in the United States?
I started looking into different market needs, and I thought that the US market is the most innovative market in the world. So all the food trends and all the innovation comes from the US market, which is true. If you try to see what's going on around the world, the US market, for a number of reasons, is where innovation comes from in the food industry. I realized, and my goal by doing that was, by understanding better the US market, originally was not to offer my products into the US market. My original goal was to understand what the trends are so that I can incorporate them into our market. However, I soon realized that Americans snack way more than anyone else in the world. Just to give you a little bit of data, breakfast and nutrition bars in the US market is going from 8 billion to 9 billion soon. In Greece, the market of bars, snack bars and nutrition bars, the whole market is 30 million in terms of dollars. I realized that I should focus on a market where consumers snack and where consumers are moving from conventional snacking to thinking more of the ingredients that they're consuming where they snack, thinking more about how healthy the snacks that they're consuming are. So, yeah, that's the story behind it.
And so once you decide to look at the U.S. market and move into it, I heard a rumor or a story about one shipping container full of cookies moving to New York. What was that all about?
So this was all about ignorance, which is a driving force for entrepreneurs. If you know how difficult something is, most probably you'll never try it. However, so what happened was I believed originally that if I create a product that is tasty and if I create a product that I believe offers value for the end consumers, I believe that the hard part would be to enter the market. So I thought that creating a tasty product that checks the boxes that I thought were important, if I manage to create that, then I'll succeed. I didn't realize that creating the product is only the beginning of the journey. And what happened was it took me 2 years to actually develop the first line of products, our first family of products of breakfast biscuits. And I decided to create a large batch and ship it from Greece to the US and then travel to the US to figure out how am I going to sell these products into the market. And I thought that it would be easy. And of course, this was extremely hard. But then after I managed to start selling the products door to door and I started getting into grocery stores, I then realized that this was not even the hardest part. After you get into the market and you start selling into grocery stores, that's where the hard part begins. Because at the end, what happens is when consumers can find your product, at the end, it's not about liking your product. It's about how much they like your product versus the other products on the shelf. Because at the end, what they compare you with is the other products on the shelf. So at the end, you have to deliver a product that is tastier, number one, and convinces the consumers to select your items versus other products from Mondelez, from General Mills, from Mars, from whoever sits on the shelves.
So when you talk about the shelves and the first ones you got onto, who was that first retailer that took the leap to believe in what you were doing? And what was it about the brand that you think really caught their attention?
So when I decided to immigrate to the US, I decided that two type of retailers. There are these large, big box retailers like Target, Whole Foods. And then there are small independent stores. And what happens is that across the U.S., more than 90% of grocery stores are chain retailers and less than 10% are independent stores. But if you look into certain areas, certain metropolitan areas, and specifically New York or San Francisco, these areas have more independent stores than grocery chains. So I decided to focus to New York because I thought that I could go door to door and sell to these independent stores rather than going to large chains, retailers that would be hard to convince them to sell in. And honestly, this was the best period throughout this journey. because it was very empowering going around with my product and selling to these independent grocery stores. I felt very motivated to do that and happy to do that. And honestly, the sales pitch to these independent stores was not hard at all. It was very easy because all these independent stores, they would say, okay, just bring me a case of free product and we're going to check the shelf for 1 week or 2 weeks. And depending on if the product actually sells through, then we're going to start buying. So the selling process was pretty straightforward. The hard part was, how do you now move the product from the shelf? And that's when you have to get in front of consumers and convince them why they should try. And then once they try, to keep buying again.
Talent is a big part of predicting the turn. And as we talk about talent, I wanted to mention one of our sponsors, Hunt Club. Imagine the power of the best marketers in the world helping you to find your next marketing leader. That's the power of Hunt Club. Hunt Club is a new category of talent company that powers the network of experts, connectors, and business leaders to help you find the best talent. Let's face it, recruiting hasn't changed with the times. Hunt Club is changing the recruiting game by leveraging technology and crowdsourced referrals to find you the best people possible for your company. Stop paying job boards that don't work or recruiting firms that recycle the same active candidates. Partner with Hunt Club.
With that in mind of getting in front of the consumers, how have you communicated with them the uniqueness of the ancient Greek grains that are at the heart of your products?
So we just now, after how long is it now? I launched our business end of 2017, so almost 8 years ago, and we just now did a big rebranding. So the reason I'm mentioning this is that I believe doing a rebranding is a very important exercise and milestone for a company, but you have to do it at the right time. What I mean is that until we did this rebrand, the whole messaging and what our product and our packaging was communicating was more about me rather than about the consumers. It was what I thought was important to consumers, because honestly, I didn't have any data points originally. I didn't know. I was guessing what consumers would like and what they would resonate with. That's how our brand originally was. And I believe that this authenticity is very clear on our packaging and consumers could realize that. However, now what we did is we tried to gather all the data on what the product actually means for consumers and translated it into our current looks and feels. So, yeah, if I answered the original question, which is how do we communicate the ancient grains? And we do it in two ways. So obviously we communicate it on the packaging itself, but we mainly communicate it indirectly on the product itself. If someone tries our product, they will feel and taste the difference of the ancient grains. Because the ancient grains is not about making a claim around it as much as delivering the nutritional and taste benefits of the ancient grains.
As you've gone through this journey, you mentioned starting with the independent retailers, etc. How did you then take that leap and start moving into the mass channels and ultimately ending up nationwide with a great retailer like Target?
Actually, we decided to do this earlier rather than later, go after large box retailers. The reason being was that you have to keep the lights on. In order to do that, you need to have a minimum scale in terms of sales so that you can actually keep the business going. So selling into independent stores, it is vital in order for you to understand what resonates and what works, what doesn't work. But you cannot operate only by selling in small independent stores. So you have to scale. And honestly, this is a very difficult dilemma, which all CPG founders in the food and beverage industry have. How fast do we move into larger retailers? Because we need the revenues to survive. But then if we go into the large retailers and we do not succeed, then you fail hard. So it is the hardest balance to figure out in our industry. That's why I believe I would do certain things differently. And one thing that I would do differently is definitely gather more data online, understand online, start selling on Amazon or through D2C. One of the, not both, Amazon and D2C. I would select either D2C or Amazon in order to better fine-tune the value proposition before going into large box retailers.
That's interesting you say either D2C or Amazon. A lot of people think about of those, it's just online. It's the same thing. What do you think is such, why did you distinguish and say, I would either choose one or the other, but not both?
That's a great question. Yes, many things think of it as one, but it's not. The reason being is you have to think like Amazon as an online retailer, whereas our own e-commerce, and the difference between our own e-commerce or Amazon is that within Amazon, people are scrolling in with purchase intent. They go into Amazon.com to look for items to buy. Whereas for people to go into your website, you have to drive and find these people. And the people, you find them usually through performance marketing, which is Meta, Google Ads, and perhaps now TikTok. And the people that you're going after through the performance marketing are scrolling around on their social media. They're not actually looking to buy snacks. I'm not saying it's not a successful tactic. It can be very successful. But I'm saying that they are scrolling on their or Instagram and they see a snack in there. Whereas on Amazon, they are already in there looking to buy snacks.
It's a great distinction. Final question for you as we dive into this. You started with the breakfast cookies, with the core product. And since then, you've expanded multiple times with different products. What's kind of led your product development strategy? And as you've thought about new products, new categories, how have you thought about what stays the core for your product and where are the places you can experiment?
So we see the core of our products as wholesome snacks that offer energy on the go. So we think our product, our brand, as a guilt-free snack that mother would give to their kids, but also the husband would steal from their bags. And where we currently stand is in the breakfast / wholesome snack bars. So what we're doing is we're looking into the set and we see, okay, what are the products in here and how can we offer a better version of legacy brands? So for example, as you mentioned, our first family of products was we saw Belvita breakfast biscuits and we thought, okay, how can we actually make a healthy breakfast biscuit? And then we saw another category, which was fruit and grain bars, and all of them in the category are not healthy. So how do we actually create a well-balanced nutritionally fruit and grain bar? And we see a lot of room for growth into this set because not a lot of innovation comes in this set. Honestly, most of the innovation in the bar segment comes from the protein / nutrition set. And of course, by using our knowledge on the baking ingredients, we can grow in many categories that are baked goods. We see the future very bright in many categories. Just to give you an example, for example, pita chips. Stacey's pita chips. There's no one out there actually offering a better for you alternative, which is a salty snack far away from the wholesome breakfast snacks. But still, since we have the knowledge and the ingredients, we can grow and diversify in many aisles in the future. As we see our brand growing, though, our strategy would be to grow closely to where we currently are. So we want to grow to the breakfast set where we are currently positioned and expand across different categories.
Wonderful. I love that kind of perspective for it. So is there anything coming up now that the rebrand is out the door? What's next that you're most excited about?
Honestly, our team is super creative. We are trying to keep pace on the whole innovation pipeline that we have, because I'm trying to push the brake a bit on the innovation because we are growing so fast that we need to keep up with production right now. So we are working on a number of products, but I don't see us launching them until second half of next year. And what we might do most probably is we're going to most probably start to launch them online, as I mentioned earlier, so that we can gather enough data before we launch them into retail. Although we have built incredible relationship with great retailer. So the strategy that I mentioned earlier about emerging brands launching online, I think is critical even for brands that already have presence in retail.
Perfect. I think that is an amazing place to bring the conversation to a close. So I really appreciate you taking the time to share this amazing journey of both your family's history in the space and the new chapter that you're helping write for the business.
Thank you very much, Dave. I'm honored and grateful.
Thanks so much for listening. If you like the show, hit that rating and make sure to subscribe so you don't miss a single episode. And for more resources, head over to predictingtheturn.com.